When Ram won its first Motor Trend Truck of the Year, it was celebrated. But after seven times, what's left to say? The trophy speaks for itself. And now, so does the deal with Employee Pricing Plus. Stop by your local dealer today and take home a Ram truck. Ram, seven-time Motor Trend Truck of the Year. Nothing stops Ram. Offer valid on select 2024 and 2025 Rams for non-FCA employees and retirees. $200 admin fee applies. Not all buyers will qualify. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details. N6225. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
I wanna be your Tokyo convertible.
We're gonna have to pay royalties on this.
I won't sing anymore then, even though I wanna have fun with you.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And this week we are talking about Slumber Party Massacre 2. Double the trouble.
Bigger. Better. Supernaturalier.
Yeah, it's an interesting twist. Now, like, if you asked me, I would just what the plot of this movie was. I'd say that it has a loose connection to Slumber Party Massacre 1, and it follows the same sort of rules that A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 does, where we are taking our villain and making him more of a metaphor than anything else.
That's actually one thing I did want to say. I don't want to say it so far off the top of the show because I don't want to be like, hello, welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. This is the fun podcast. So, about slashers being a metaphor for sex.
Okay, but I bring that up because the synopsis on Letterboxd, which I got to tell you.
A metaphor for sex, Slumber Party Massacre 2, follows Courtney as she tries to lose her virginity.
Letterboxd is not always the best place to go for a synopsis, but I really think it summarizes this movie pretty well. Courtney is, that's how it starts, just Courtney. Everyone's familiar with Courtney. Courtney is tormented by dreams of the infamous driller killer returning.
He's infamous?
Returning.
I think she's the only one that knew about him.
It seems like a Tariq Havoc. Dot,
returning?
Dot, dot. Only to find that the murderous monster is reincarnated as an evil rocker.
I have some bones to pick.
That's my question, right? Like, is he the soul and spirit of the villain from the first movie reincarnated as an evil rocker, or is it something else entirely? These are the questions that we will answer tonight on Nightmare on Film Street.
So, you did mention something off the top of the show that I absolutely agree with. Writer-director Deborah Brock, shout out to her, because this is a fucking dope movie.
Incredible.
Huge Nightmare on Elm Street fan, right?
Huge. Has to be.
The French braids and all are just screaming Nancy.
Huh?
The French braid. Nancy has it in the end sequence of the original Nightmare on Elm Street when there's that, like, convertible dream sequence. That Tokyo convertible dream sequence.
I believe you.
All right, whatever.
Sorry.
But also, there are so many moments in this movie that just scream Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, yeah. There's a bathtub scene, and we literally have our heroine, like, you know, in the bubbles. Mm-hmm. This one's got blood, which is dope. Super cool. Love mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, this is maybe the first time I picked it up on this watch, but the scene when they are down at the pool and she's trying to explain to one of the girlfriends about her dream. It feels so much like the scene when Nancy is trying to tell Tina on the couch at the very beginning of the movie. Like, it's almost like verbatim. Yeah. And there is a character named Krueger.
There is a character named Krueger. If I remember correctly.
And there's also a character named Craven.
Well, aren't, isn't
that? But that's
that
from the first film.
Exactly. Okay, yeah. So in the first film. The first Slumber Party Massacre follows a group of girls who are being terrorized.
Who are being Slumber Party Massacred.
By a driller killer, like a slasher who is using a big spiral drill.
But in the first one, the killer is like a weird repressed pervert.
Aren't they all?
Not this one. This one's fun.
He's definitely not repressed. And then, so Courtney, the lead of this movie, is the little sister of, turns out to be the final girl of the first movie, but is kind of like a side character throughout three quarters of the film. Yeah, so she is a carryover character from the first movie. Her sister...
They basically just carried over the trauma of the first movie.
Yeah, exactly. The opening is her having a sexy dream about her soon-to-be maybe boyfriend.
Catching a football.
I was going to say, playing football. There's not really a whole lot sexy about it, but then it becomes a living nightmare as we see a bunch of blood and images and visions of her sister in a mental institution.
Who's like, don't have sex!
Don't go all the way! That's what she says.
I love that. I love that so much.
But in that dream, she's also having flashes of the first movie. I get it. Awesome. We're a sequel. Why not do it? And also flashes of, like, visions of what's going to happen in this movie. Which is crazy.
Yeah, which we learned pretty early on, because when she goes to get in her friend's car, there's like this dead pigeon that was definitely in her dream the night before.
A bad
so
omen.
So shit's coming true.
Mm-hmm. Big update from the first movie. Like these, the cast of characters in the first movie, like the girls who are having the slumber party. What a great group of ladies. And this one, we've got essentially a band. Like, that's the core four in this movie. They are a band, and they are going to spend the weekend at one of their friends' parents' condos.
Which is way more than just a condo.
No, they just, like,
it is
a
fucking
somewhere sweet
house.
Yeah, it's in the middle of a subdivision. It's in the middle of being built. It seems like this is the only house that has furniture, carpet, and a fully functional pool. Everybody else
I think
is,
the pool is, like... like multi-access, because there were a lot of loungers.
They got money.
I think it's a communal pool. Like, it's like the condo's pool.
I don't know about
not
that.
Not important. Not important at all.
And that's where we are for the entire weekend. You know, like, we're
having
to be
a slumber
no boys
party
for a little while, and then the boys are eventually going to come. And for the most part, we're here to practice. We're here to get some work done. Also, it's Courtney's birthday weekend.
And we have lots of canned cheese.
Lots of canned cheese.
Oh, and side note, something we noticed during this watch. They were eating kettle chips. Most exciting thing, the branding hasn't changed since 1982. It is the same logo.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I had the logo for the kettle chips so ingrained in my brain, but I was just like, whoa, Leo Point.
I also spent a bunch of time.
Needlessly.
I was Leo pointing at a can of Diet Pepsi. I'm just like, is that how big?
We were like, that's not regulation size. And then we had to Google the fucking milliliters of Pepsi in 1987.
And it actually looks like it hasn't really changed very much, which is a surprise.
It was bigger. It was bigger.
Maybe she's just got a little girl hand.
No, that was a weird, weird Pepsi size. I would say it was like 40 milliliters more than we have now.
Maybe it's like a
king size.
I think there was a tie-in Pepsi with Top Gun. Maybe it's a bigger can of Pepsi.
Okay, Italian size
I
buy. Because it's not quite like, you know, the tall Pepsis that they had, like the tall Slims. Because it was the same like width of, okay, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It does not matter. So as she's having these nightmares, they're starting to, like, interfere with her waking life. Like, she's seeing fingers in her burger. She's seeing headless chickens attack her from the fridge.
Oh, my God.
Her friend, the drummer, who's super cute, Sally, explodes a pimple. It's great.
It's disgusting. I can't believe we're glossing over it. I would spend 20 minutes talking about that sequence. It's incredible.
They really committed to, like, a series of escalating physical effects on her face.
Well, they lay the groundwork early, too. Like, I got this pimple.
I have so many pimples.
I'm turning into
it's
one giant pimple.
It's underneath the surface.
I can't see it, but, like, I know that it's there. And then, yeah, when it finally becomes massive and disgusting, it's just every time we cut back to her, the pimple's gotten bigger and bigger to the point where it's, like, sagging off of her face and dragging all of her skin with it. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I commend that actress because she fully committed to that. And then also being a corpse later on, best corpse of the movie.
Uh-huh. She's one of two actresses in this movie that would later go on to be in a Friday the 13th film.
Oh, yay.
She was in New Blood and one of the other girls was in A New Beginning.
Which one?
I don't know. I think it was Amy.
Yeah, like, disclaimer, we might not have the names fully right because we tried, but it's fucking hard. Half of them don't have photo bios. Most of them don't have Wikipedia pages. Surprisingly, the fucking Driller Killer does not have a Wikipedia page. The
it
character
was scrubbed
needs
from the internet. Absolutely. It was totally scrubbed
from the
internet.
Oh, maybe that's true. Yeah, so the actor who played, well, the guy who played him, who didn't really do a lot of acting, I think he did three movies.
And this was the first one.
This was the first one?
I think this was his first film.
Wow. Yeah. Good for him. Atanas Illich. Yeah. He's an heir of some crazy like sporting fortune.
Well, I think we learned on that Joe Bob Briggs show that they own Little Caesar's Pizza.
I thought it was Pringles. I was like, the fucking Pringles heir is so cool.
Well, and he had an album that was out before this, like in 1986. He'd put out one album. He's got a couple other singles. I think there's a CD that
was
came
he
out
like,
in
this is my shot. This is my shot to stardom. I can sing.
Yeah.
And be a killer.
Well, I don't know if the killer had anything to do with it, but I think it was just his agent
so cool.
was probably just like, this is the perfect role for you. This is, gives you the ability to do everything. You're a triple threat.
Well, he's definitely gotta be singing his own songs, right? Because when he is singing, he's singing about being like a rich guy and having tons of money, and you're like, did you write this? Is this autobiographical?
It seems like it. I don't think he wrote those songs.
Let's buzz. And he wiggled his little butt.
What killer takes a break halfway through his massacre?
Oh, I fucking love it.
To have a song,
to
right?
To change the lighting in the room, to supernaturally change the lighting in the room and have a full, like, fucking solo party by yourself. There's a girl bleeding out, like, crawling away from him. Like, can you please give me some dignity?
Can you imagine? You're staring death in the face. He's coming for you, and he stops to do a show tune in the middle of it?
I'd be like, listen, buddy, I appreciate all of this, the flair, the effort, you're really doing it, but these are my final moments. This is all I have.
It's a shame some of these girls were just like, I mean, this is a hit. Maybe we should write this down. Like, they're there this weekend to work on songs.
Everybody's a musician. They could have pleaded with him, right? Like, they have things in common.
It's interesting that, do you think that's what, is that what attracted him to her? It's just like, hey, we speak the same language. We're
simpatico. We shop at the same store.
Everybody in this movie is a musician, except for the Adam Devine character, who's just like, ho, the whole time.
He did pick up a guitar. We just never got to see him play it.
We heard it. It was not good.
Oh, he played it?
A little bit. It was bad.
I did want to ask you that as the resident musician. Uh-huh. It looked like the girls that were playing guitars knew what they were doing, but not the drummer.
Not the drummer. She did a great job.
She looked like she was having the greatest time, and she exuded drummer energy. She had the hair and the, like, not being the smartest person in the group.
Oh, don't say that.
The energy of a drummer.
I think that if she really buckled down.
Like, and the hair, the mullet of a drummer.
I think she could actually drum. I think she has an aptitude for it. Like, I think this is like,
she just needed the rhythm.
I think this is, she's maybe been behind a kit for 30 minutes before they hit, like, you know, before they called action. I think she did great.
Yeah, no, she had the enthusiasm. And isn't that really what the drummer is? The cheerleader for the group?
Yeah, no.
And also keeps the tempo.
I was going to say, they're definitely not the core of the group where everything fails if they're not in time. That is the best part about watching bands, because, like, you either hear, most of the time, you hear them all speed up just slowly. Over time, they all get faster and faster and faster and faster and faster because the drummer just slowly speeds up. That's about all the input I have as far as, like, having.
But
any
it did
sort
look like
talent.
The girls, like, they looked like they were playing the
Absolutely,
song.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, no, they really looked like they could play guitar.
And their songs were pretty damn catchy.
They're all right.
I kind of dug them.
Okay.
I loved all the music in this movie, to be
really?
Honest.
Really?
I love the soundtrack.
I don't know. Wow. I don't know if I love.
They did peak Tokyo Convertible, I will say that.
And that's early in the movie. Which is, a real song. I can't find it on Spotify, but the end credits say that it's... They don't list a band, but they... They do say, from the album Man Alive, written by this person, but there's no performed by this band.
Okay.
Maybe it's written for a movie? There were all the credits except for played by this band.
Wow.
Did your last vacation house for the whole crew leave you wishing there was a better way to stay together? Like with bedrooms that are all great, so everyone thinks they got the best room?
Whoa! This is amazing.
A full bathroom in every bedroom?
Hey, mine's got a bathroom.
A beach around an epic, clear bay big enough for swimming, rope swinging, and even kayaking? All next door to Walt Disney World? Next trip, share a house at Evermore Orlando Resort. You won't believe what you resorted to before.
Okay, so let's talk about the killer, because that is something that's unique to this movie. And I think what makes it such a great sequel to the first film, because the first film is a really fun but tried and true slasher. Mm-hmm. And this one is in strange territory. is that because we're in 87 and we are in, like, you know, Freddy is really king at this time? Like, we're starting to get more supernatural with slashers in general. Like, Jason's, you know, just not dying and getting gooier and gooier. Is that why?
Maybe. Maybe they just wanted
like,
to
like, supernatural's in, baby!
Where else do you go from here? Because, like, obviously they wanted to have the Driller Killer again, but he's dead. And so your choices
and
are
he's kind of dry. Like, he's great in the first movie, but I don't know if he has, like, the staying power of being a multiple sequel villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think so.
But this Driller Killer has sequel opportunity.
Okay, so you're saying this guy, this is where we hang a dynasty.
I agree with that, but also too, there's something strange in that, like, what are his motivations?
Oh, none.
Like, is he anything beyond appearing here to impale some women?
I mean, you could make an argument that what's the guy in the first movie doing? Does he have anything in, like, cooking
beyond
that? He's got
repressed things happening.
Yeah.
He's getting out some violent anger.
I don't know. I think they were put in a really tough position because they, like I said, they want to have the Driller Killer again, and your choices are either have a copycat killer show up. That's got a little boring, you know, or do this weird route where you have some sort of supernatural element that brings him back. It's strange that he's a completely different guy and now he's got little dancing feet, you know?
he does boogie.
But I think that it's like, it is a logical extension. What a weird thing to say with this fucking movie. This fucking movie.
Logically.
This, yeah.
Slumber Party Massacre 2.
This movie's just good, dumb fun. Like, this is a pizza party movie.
It is.
And I'm like, it's a logical extension from the metaphor of the original film. to go into the repressed fear of sexuality of these young girls. Like, but I think that's kind of it, you know? Like, it's clearly just that she's scared of losing her virginity. And it's taken to the most wild degree. Like, that fear becomes a new Driller Killer.
So, you know what I think he is? I think he's a tulpa. I think he is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he is the memory of the killer in the first one.
Is that the secret theme of this season?
That's manifested into what this apparition is, because it is all of her interests and personality amalgamated into this one killer.
It really is her.
She's
yeah.
the musician.
Yeah.
So that's something that's been transposed onto this memory. And then also he's kind of like dreamy and into her and in love with her. And he's like basically like killing all of her friends so he can just get to her. But he does it in this like lovey way.
Is it lovey?
He says he loves her sometimes. And he's also doing like lyric one-liners from classic songs. But yeah, I think he is the memory of the killer in the first one. But it's an apparition of that. It's like a warped funhouse mirror come to life of that killer.
Do you think the creative
and
team...
also her fear of sex? That it's 50-50. It's 50% her fear of sex, 50% Driller Killer from the first film, and then we're going to be 110%, 10% musical ability.
Okay. Do you think any of the creative team had these conversations when they made the movie? Or were they just like, ooh, that's a great idea. I think I love that look of that guy. How does he get there? Ooh, hard to figure out.
Like, they were just researching like the history of the tulpa and the ancient rites.
Oh, God. I hope not. Like, those are not the conversations that I want my B-movie people to be having. I think that I just want them to start from design and color gels and work back.
But I think the key thing that makes him a tulpa and what a tulpa is it is manifested. You are its keeper. You are the, not keeper, but you are its base of creation.
It's a psychological
It is
golem.
Energy that you have fed it with.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's why everything is kind of escalating into the real world. She has the Freddy power. She is bringing things from the dream world into the real world. She is making headless chickens explode with motor oil.
Yeah, it's definitely not blood. I love how much you love this movie. Like, you are loving talking about this.
I really like this movie.
So do I.
It's simple, stupid fun, but it's also just like, on its surface, so just enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that they justify it as a sequel in this universe without necessarily taking away from the first film or doing anything about the first film, but being its own thing.
Yes.
Like, you can just watch this movie and be like, haha, they're having a pillow fight and somebody's boobs are out. And then, like, we're eating string cheese and, you know, we're doing band practice. And, oh, no, somebody's murdering us now. And you're like, yay, that was so much fun.
And then, also, bing, bam, boom, out in 75 minutes. Holy shit.
It was so fast. But then also you have moments like poor Sally getting impaled into the wall, and then the the drill going through the phone as they're calling 911. Like, that is fucking cinema.
I know, the way the phone falls apart looks incredible.
So good. So like a genuinely scary thing. Like something that you know, putting your perspective into the victims in that moment. You're just like, fuck, everything's over. Also, Sally's dead.
And they cannot get any help. Like, we do find out that there are people living in this subdivision. No one will help them. People are driving by and just leaving them
in the dust. I do think this is a lot about class structure, to be honest.
They're of that class. Yeah. Like, this is what, Amy's dad's place? You know, like, some people have a wine cellar. My dad has a booze closet. And they're just drinking champagne all weekend.
It's a vibe.
It's a vibe.
And eating corn dogs. Like, aren't you jealous?
I mean, yeah. Absolutely. I'd be doing it right now if I didn't have to record this podcast.
That would be my diet if I wasn't in my 30s. Champagne and corn dogs?
We used to do that all the time on our anniversary. Champagne and pizza. That
Don't
was
tell
the thing.
People. It's still a thing. We still do it.
At first, it was an accident. I mean, it was just like, this is kind of funny. Let's just keep this going. Yeah, it's a great tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I still think I like the first Slumber Party Massacre more.
I feel like me with this franchise, and I say that having not seen the third one.
Haven't seen the third one. Did see the remake.
My favorite one is the one I most recently watched.
Oh, sure.
You know, like, I'm like, this one is the best. Clearly the second one. It's so fun. And then when we watch the first one again, I'm like, damn, this is a really great slasher.
Yeah, I think I've really come around on the first one. Years ago, I would have, like, sight unseen said, oh, the second one is the better one. And the second one is... I don't know if it's more fun, because I think the first one is so goddamn funny. It has such a great personality. But yeah, there is an outlandish streak in Slumber Party Massacre 2 that Slumber Party Massacre 1 does not have.
Yeah.
It is very willing to be bubblegum fun.
Yes, and I think it really fulfills the promise of being a Slumber Party worthy slasher
Absolutely.
Movie to watch.
Like, absolutely.
This you could watch with your fans that don't really like horror just because it's so
could you?
Bright and fun.
You
and
get to that giant
silly.
Zit popping, though, and they're out.
Yeah, but that's what's so fun about it, is there's like this brief moment of just like, ew!
It's
and then,
disgusting.
And then we're back to singing pop songs.
Like, there's a whole bucket of gross
and
thick.
And the killer's jiggling his butt!
I don't know if I love the rockabilly stuff.
I love it.
It's just, it's not, it's like PG-rated cramps, you know? Especially with the buzz, but okay, Kim loves it. Yeah, yeah. There was a time in the 80s where they were bringing back rockabilly, like the Stray Cats.
Rockabilly's still in, John.
Yes, but it's gotten more of an edge.
Rockabilly is eternal.
But rockabilly to me is a switchblade knife, and this rockabilly is the switchblade comb.
Rockabilly to me is tiki drinks.
Okay, well, yeah, it's not so bad either.
And the eyeliner I refuse to give up.
This guy's got a lot of eyeliner. I love his guitar. Like, I'll say that. Like, I love the look. Like, you know, leather from...
Oh, you love the rockabilly look?
Shut up. I don't think that these are very good rockabilly songs. And, like, we keep cutting to silence where the characters are like... we're hiding for our lives, and then a buzz like we cut back and forth from song to no song in a very weird way.
Yeah, so there is some like audio moments where she's having dreams and they're strangely silent.
Yeah,
and we're watching like a silent clip show where I would have loved more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that might have just been like a budgetary thing where they were like, oh yeah, we don't need much score because we're gonna have tons of songs in this movie. And then they were cutting it together and they're like, oh,
fuck. We didn't.
Oh, shit.
Call Derek on the phone. See if we can borrow a Tokyo convertible.
Because there are moments where, like, when they're driving up to the condo, there's this, like, country twang kind of song playing.
Oh, yeah.
And then when they get to the house, they're playing that song again.
It's still
again.
On the radio, yeah. It's like Hell's Gate or something.
Tokyo convertible.
But I think the thing that drove you most nuts while we were watching this was that cake that he got for her for her birthday.
That was a fire hazard.
Because he just put a cake down on the bed and then they forgot about
it? Yeah, so then they're like making out and maybe we're going to like, you know, get past second base. And then the killer comes and kills the love interest, and this is when he's
Man,
like...
Man, what a great fucking kill.
He first is revealed to be, ta-da, in the real world. And then... we cut away and the cake is still lit and the killer throws like Matt's arm in it or whatever.
Oh, it's so great.
But it has been lit for some time.
Just like a severed arm smash into the happy birthday.
There is not enough wax on those candles for them to be like lit for that period of time.
No, they're all going to die. You know, this is what it is. It's a Jacob's ladder scenario.
They all burnt down.
They all burnt to death, and in their dying moments what they hallucinated was this rockabilly driller killer who came to
I think it was those undercooked chicken sandwiches at the beginning of the
You think
movie.
That's what it is? They
it
all
was
got
lunch.
Botulism?
Yeah. Because she keeps getting haunted by chickens. And there's feathers everywhere when they're...
Well, that's like, from the pillow fight.
But it's a chicken-coated movie, John.
I gotta tell you, I really fell for the slumber party pillow fight thing growing up. I really thought...
You guys really believed in it.
Yeah, we did. Because of movies like this.
Honestly, you guys would have been terrified actually doing that, like peeking in windows... of teenage girls, even teenage girls, having their slumber party, because it was all the craft. We were all doing fucking magic.
That's great.
We were calling like, the fucking corners.
How do we kill the boys?
You guys would have just like backed away and been like, this is not what we prepared for. And that and reading Cosmo Girl, that like those are the two things you did.
It's a much quieter affair than anybody
nails,
ever expected.
Nails, tarot, raising the dead.
This sounds rad.
Light as
I
a feather,
really should have been
board. And it's so funny. Anytime you see it in a slasher, you can look at every girl watching and they're all rolling their eyes like, oh, I got champagne. I got to take off my top. And then my bra. And then like after we do it all, I'm going to put the same wet bra back on.
It's crazy.
Why did you take it off?
And do you think that it's contractually obligated, though? Like, if you're going to say it's a slumber party massacre?
Oh, absolutely. There has to at least be a pillow fight.
Yeah.
They went extra here with the feathers. I love the feathers. I might take my top off if somebody starts shaking feathers around.
I know, and it was Courtney who was doing it. Like, she just ripped open a pillow, not her pillow, and just started throwing them in the air for, like, ambiance. She was like, this is what the scene needs right now.
It did. It was great.
This is what happens when you drink champagne, guys. And you eat Cheese Whiz from a can.
I was about to be like, it's a Gatsby party, but not with the Cheese Whiz.
So this is definitely your favorite slumber party movie then?
As of right now, yeah.
As of right now.
But so, I'll watch the other one and that one will be the favorite. Okay. Like they are both like tied at first.
It's such a good time. Like as much as I'm like, it's not a
perfect
movie.
Yeah, why you gotta shit on rockabilly for?
I don't know. There's just something about it in the middle where I'm like,
are you hangry?
But it is a lot of good fun. Like,
so
I'll
do
say.
You like the first one more?
Absolutely. And you know here, you know the problem might be? I didn't have a beer while we were watching it. I think that's the problem. I did not get in the right mindset. Is that the right way to watch this movie? How do you recommend people check this one out? Do they have to watch the first one?
Honestly, I would say a huge scoop of like Breyers ice cream.
Oh, that's a great
in
idea.
In a plastic bowl, like the bowl from like the back of your Tupperware cover that you know you got at like a baseball game when you were 12.
What?
And it's like melting a little bit and you got sprinkles on it.
You got a bowl at a baseball game?
Yeah, I got a sundae there once and I came in
and
like
you
a plastic
kept the
hat.
Bowl?
Yeah, it was a cool hat.
Oh, it was a hat bowl.
But you know, like you got a promotional bowl somewhere when you were like 12 and it's got like Grimace on it or some shit.
Okay.
That's the bowl you use
got
with
it.
The melty ice cream.
Okay.
Sprinkles? And it's got to be vanilla with sprinkles.
Sprinkles, okay. Yeah. Any other toppings? You just a sprinkles girl?
Just sprinkles.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, people go crazy with ice
cream. You could
cream.
Do chocolate, but then it might get gross when you're in the pimple scene. If it takes you 90 minutes to eat a bowl of ice cream,
you
don't want to add any syrups for the pimple scene alone.
I think that's a great recommendation. I think that's how you get in the vibe for this. I think you're right. Yeah.
Or a beer. I guess that's easier.
Yeah, or a beer. Those could not be further from each other.
Not together.
You have to pick one lane and stick to it. You cannot cross the streams on this one.
How would you watch the movie then?
Nachos.
Nachos.
Nachos and beer.
Is that going to be your answer for every movie?
Yes. Yeah. Slumber Party Massacre, Day Shift, Videodrome, Nachos and Beer.
I mean,
guys.
The first Slumber Party Massacre is definitely pizza and weed, right? Because that's what girls are doing.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, chase those vibes.
Ooh, champagne and ice cream might be nice, even though those definitely shouldn't go together.
Oh, corn dogs, I guess.
Corn dogs would be fun.
Yeah.
But that's just us, guys. How do you watch Slumber Party Massacre 2? How are you going to themify this movie night? Let us know in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord.
If you're a fan of Nightmare on Film Street, get extra content by joining us in our Fiend Club over on Patreon. There's tons of bonus episodes there, exclusive merch, and tons of perks. Check it out at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
We'll be back again soon with another episode and another clue to what this season's secret theme is. But until then, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
Buzz, buzz.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
When Ram won its first Motor Trend Truck of the Year, it was celebrated. But after 7 times, what's left to say? The trophy speaks for itself. And now, so does the deal with Employee Pricing Plus. Stop by your local dealer today and take home a Ram truck. Ram, 7-time Motor Trend Truck of the Year. Nothing stops Ram. Offer valid on select 2024 and 2025 Rams for non-FCA employees and retirees. $200 admin fee applies. Not all buyers will qualify. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details. N6225. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.